The Eyes on the Game show is owned and produced by Helen Yee. All opinions expressed by the hosts or guests are their own and are not endorsed by either radio station management or any of its advertisers.
It's Eyes on the Game with Helen Yee, the only female sports host in Las Vegas. Go online to HelenMYee.com and follow on Twitter at Helen Yee Sports on NBC Sports 920 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? It is quite the lovely Tuesday. Already December. That is crazy. And Bobby is not here today. Instead, it is Jared. Do you want to introduce yourself to my listeners?
Hello, I'm Jared.
Are you a LeBron fan? Let's cut to the chase.
Yeah, why wouldn't I be?
I like you already.
Okay, because I was like, is there another option to that? Because, yeah, why would I be a LeBron fan?
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So
I mean,
many
I've seen him play
aren't.
Basketball.
Right? Right or right? That's what my best friend says. He's always like, right or right?
There we go.
Sometimes you say or, you know, but So, okay, long weekend. I covered the Ultimate Fighter. There was a lot of hockey going on, which they do return today. I will be covering that game, the Golden Knights. They do play the champs last year, Washington Capitals, 7 p.m. at T-Mobile Arena. And then on Thursday, they host the Chicago Blackhawks, and that is at 7 p.m. as well. But Jared, how was your weekend? This is cool. It's my first time talking to you on here.
It was fun, I guess. I was here. I was working the UNLV game, so
okay.
It was a lot of, you know, work. I'm not out partying. I get to watch UNLV play slow as molasses Cincinnati, and then I get to also listen to UNLV play slow as molasses Cincinnati on the radio. So I wouldn't recommend it, if that helps.
But you had fun, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's most important. Life is too short not to have fun. And because it's already almost 2019, that is crazy. I can't believe it. Oh my gosh. A lot of exciting things coming up, though. So like I said, this past weekend, for me, I covered the Ultimate Fighter 30, or I always say Ultimate Fighter 30, Ultimate Fighter 28. It was on November 30th. And so Juan Espino, he won the heavyweight tournament. And if you want to watch any of the post-fight media scrums, I do have one with him, Kamaru Usman. He beat former champion Rafael Dos Anjos. I have one with Dana White, who talks about Usman fighting Woodley next. And what's going on with the lightweight division, Khabib, McGregor, Tony Ferguson, obviously, Dustin Poirier. Lots going on over there. And then Sage Northcutt did sign with ONE FC. And Dana White addresses, you know, or kind of put some rumors to rest on if, you know, what really happened kind of behind the scenes. But again, all of those videos, if you're interested, they are up on lvsportsnetwork.com. And the Wilder Fury fight, are you a boxing fan?
Yes. Well, I used to be.
Did you watch that fight?
I didn't get a chance to.
Oh my gosh.
But I did enjoy Twitter. Twitter was great.
Yeah, I was like, at one point, you know when you just start typing all the keys, you know, on your phone, like all the letters, that's how I felt. It was crazy. I don't know, should I spoil it for you right now?
No, is that okay? Spoil it.
So the ninth round, you know, Fury gets knocked down. And we're like, okay, you know, he recovers. So Fury, in my opinion, I was scoring it for him the entire fight. And then, you know, ninth, I was like, okay, obviously Wilder got that round. And I thought Tyson controlled the entire fight. But then the 12th round, I don't know if you saw on Twitter that he came up like the Undertaker.
Yes,
like,
that's what I was enjoying. I was loving that.
Yeah, well, It was literally, it was so crazy. I still can't believe that happened, where he gets quote unquote knocked out. So we all thought, right? Like every, I think even Wilder was, you know, kind of premature celebration, right? And then Fury gets back up. I was like, are you freaking serious right now? Like Tyson, Fury, like what just happened? You know, so that round, that was cool. But I have to say, though, even though I do, you know, hats off to both guys. That was a very entertaining fight, in my opinion. But I'm not a fan of draws. I think there has to always be a winner, you know?
I mean,
go into overtime, do something. Yeah.
Overtime boxing, that could. Yeah. That sounds like a recipe for a head injury.
Just like one round, like 1 minute, one round, just like going at it. But so it concluded and it was a draw. Which I thought if it went to the scorecards, despite the 12th round and Fury getting kind of knocked down, whatever. I thought Fury still won, though, in my opinion. So, and nothing against Wilder. You know, I thought those were two, like, ninth and then 12th rounds, two huge rounds for him. And some people may speculate and be like, well, that 10 count that the ref did was so long. I mean, you could say whatever, but at the end of the day, you know, Fury got back up. It is what it is. And it resulted in a draw, which, yeah, I'm just like, ugh. Sometimes, I don't know, draws just make me very irritated, especially because I think majority of the people, and, you know, I put a poll on Twitter and whatnot, and even on Instagram, and a lot of people scored it for Fury. So yeah, I mean, if you ever get a chance to watch a fight, let me know what you think.
Yeah,
Jerry.
Absolutely. I have the bad habit of every once in a while going like, I want to watch some boxing. You know what I could watch that won't take very much time? Basically all of Mike Tyson's first 10 years of his career. And it's like, and I basically spent a half hour watching boxing and got to see 25 fights. So, you know, it all worked up.
True. Yeah. Hey, but no, this one you should watch. At least watch that 12th round. Because that was crazy entertaining. Yeah, so I was like watching that and then watching the UFC. They had that in Australia. I think Mark Hunt like kind of retired. I mean, I was kind of confused because he was like thanking everybody. And then I was like, wait, is he formally retiring? And then people are like, thank you, Mark Hunt. But yeah, I mean, so Mark, he lost by decision to Justin Willis, but I mean, props to him, 44 years old, turning 45 in a few months. I mean, that's pretty good, you know, and to accumulate, I mean, 43-13 kickboxing record, MMA record. Yeah, I mean, 13-14, one draw, one no contest. I mean, not great, but I mean, he's fought some great guys. Beaten a lot of them, from Stefan Struve to, Roy Nelson, Bigfoot Silva. I know the fight with Brock Lesnar, that was controversial slightly, just because the steroid thing, the drug thing.
The steroid thing.
Yeah, Brock, don't come and find me, please. I'm just kidding. But yeah, so he won, and then also Shogun Hua, he beat Tyson Pedro, which I was kind of surprised, and that Junior Dos Santos, I mean, I kind of forgot he's only 34 years old. It seems like he's been in the game for a minute, you know, accomplished a lot, finally kind of got out of the one win, one loss type of record, you know, now riding two fight win streak, ever since his loss to Stipe Miocic, former UFC champ, let's not forget, Daniel Cormier's a champ now, double champ. But yeah, so speaking of fight news, The Ultimate Fighter, so this weekend when it was The Ultimate Fighter 28 finale at the Palms, It was Team Gastelum, Kelvin Gastelum, and Team Robert Whitaker. So I got a chance to talk to Kelvin. After the break, though, I'll play that interview. But I spoke to him about fighting for the title. So both he and Robert Whitaker are the Ultimate Fighter alumni. And I mean, I'm excited for this fight as much as I'm excited for UFC 231 this weekend, Max Holloway, Brian Ortega. I mean, that fight was supposed to go down earlier, but I know Max, you know, had some health issues, and I'm hoping, you know, that he's 100% now, and I'm glad to see him being healthy. But so that goes down this weekend in Toronto. So what intrigues me about like this fight where it's like Ortega and Holloway, which later on in the show I'll kind of give my predictions, and of course Valentina Shevchenko, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and that one, I mean, it seems kind of like a quote-unquote super fight in a way, but and kind of cool to see both of them meeting here in MMA. But anyway, so circling back to Kelvin Gastelum, because I go off on a tangent. So what intrigues me about like that fight is, in my opinion, both he and Robert Whitaker, both in their prime. You know, these are both young, hungry fighters, just like this weekend, like what we see, you know, with Ortega and Holloway. It's like two young guys in their prime. They're fighting for it. Like they, you know, they have it all on the line. And not to say that, you know, like some other ones, some other fights are mismatched. But, you know, to me, this is more intriguing to see who's the best in their prime. Like, you know, you can't be like, for example, Kelvin beat, say, Tim Kennedy. But we could say, hey, Tim Kennedy wasn't in his prime. You know, Anderson Silva is fighting Israel Adesanya, but we all know Silva's past his prime. You know, so it's kind of like that perception where it's like, okay, but in their prime, you know, if you take or Kelvin, he beat Vitor Belfort, who we know was very dangerous. I mean, pre-USADA and, you know, when he was younger. But it's like, okay, we have a young up-and-comer, you know, young guy hitting his prime now and a guy, you know, past the hill. So I mean, it's intriguing with both when both guys are like the same age, you know, both at it, you know, big wins. I know Kelvin's coming off wins over Jacare Souza, who just beat Chris Weidman, and Kelvin lost to Chris Weidman, which actually surprised me. But he also beat Michael Bisping, a former champion, and Robert Whitaker. I mean, back-to-back wins. I know, you know, that split decision, it could be whatever, controversial, whatever. But, you know, coming back, winning and beating Yoel Romero twice. And let me tell you, in my opinion, I don't even know many guys who would have the guts to fight a Yoel Romero. Jared's like,
you are talking to literally the least informed UFC person in the building.
Do not worry. I'm just blabbing.
I'm basically just like trying to remember names going, okay, I should look that person up. Okay, you should. All right, I'll look that person. I'm going to be so far behind.
Hey, no worries. No, but yeah, so that's just what intrigues me. I mean, even in boxing, right? Two guys in their primes, young up-and-comers. Hey, Lomachenko, he fights on the top-ranked card on ESPN this weekend, December 8th. Lomachenko and Pedraza. So, you know, that'll be a good fight. Keep an eye out for Teofimo Lopez. He's fighting Mason Menard. That should be good as well. Yeah, so a lot of great fights going on. But like I said, after the break, I will play my interview with Kelvin because he admits to me that the rumors are true. What Robert Whitaker heard is true, that he is underestimating the champion. And he'll explain why after the break. You can always tweet me or follow me on social media at Helen Yee Sports, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Now back to Eyes on the Game with Helen Yee, the only female sports host in Las Vegas. Go online to HelenMYee.com and follow on Twitter at Helen Yee Sports on NBC Sports 920 The Game.
Okay, so like I said, this past weekend, the Ultimate Fighter 28 finale went down at the Palms. If you're interested in any of that recap, you can check LVSportsNetwork.com. I also got a chance to talk to UFC welterweight, now middleweight, and he's actually fought or won the Ultimate Fighter as a middleweight, Kelvin Gastelum, fighting for the title, UFC 234, February. I believe February 10th. And so here is my interview with Kelvin talking about the fight. Helen Yee here with Eyes on the Game. I'm here at the UFC Performance Institute being joined by Kelvin Gastelum. Now, first off, I do know you have that big title fight coming up, UFC 234 in Australia. But before I get to talk to you about that fight, the reason you are here in Las Vegas, the Ultimate Fighter 28 finale is going down tonight. Can I kind of get your thoughts on how this season went for you?
It was a lot of work put in by my coaching staff. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's cool getting to know the guys. But at the end of the day, it's work. And we put in a lot of that. And that's just really what we can tell you. The fighters put in a lot of work. And really, they made it an easy job for me because they worked so hard in that season. And it was cool to watch them grow during the season. And I was just there to help them the way that I was helped at one point, you know. So I think we accomplished that, and I think they were able to grow. They were able to learn about themselves as fighters and as persons. So that was the ultimate goal.
And how much could you use that experience from being on the Ultimate Fighter, like you said, to now, you know, being the coach?
Yeah. Well, I had already had the experience of coaching the Tough Latin American Season 2. And so I feel like we did a lot of things better on this season that we tightened up just from the experience of coaching the Latin American season. We just made everything better, and it really showed off. It really proved in training. It really proved in the fights, and it really proved in the bonding of the team that we had. You know, I just felt like it was a great camaraderie that we had. So I think as coaches, we put in a lot of work, and it paid off.
Now, how was it kind of, you know, being in the same house or being around Robert Whittaker, who you do fight in a few months? Was there some tension?
Yes and no. You know, me and Robert kind of kept, you know, we dealt with each other's presence, but we kind of didn't really interact. Yeah. You know, we could be sitting down like you and I are, and we wouldn't say a word to each other. You know, we just deal with it. We'd be cordial. We'd say hello. We'd say goodbye. But that's it. You know, we didn't want to deal with each other, and we didn't want to do anything together more than we had to.
Yeah. Now, can you kind of talk about, you know, the big fight coming up? Because last time you and I spoke back in July, it was right before it got announced. So how relieved were you first off to hear that you got that title shot?
Yeah, well, you never really know. It's never really for sure until it's for sure, you know. And, you know, obviously I had been promised the title shot. But then, you know, I was nervous. You know, that big MSG card was coming up with all those middleweights. And I was going to say, man, they better not try and pull anything. You know, Weidman, you know, he might step in line. Who knows? I hope they don't try and pull anything like that, you know. But they didn't. They kept their word. And I was happy with once they announced it. You know, I got emotional once I got the contract. I saw it, and I was like, okay, it's on paper. It's official, and this feels real now, you know, and it felt great. It was a great feeling.
And what about to get the title shot in the middleweight division? I mean, what were your thoughts? Because initially you fought at welterweight for a while, too.
Yeah, for a little while, you know, but I did start my career as a middleweight. But my focus was to stay at middleweight and get the title, at welterweight and get the title shot at welterweight. But just because I felt it was a more suited weight class for me. But, you know, things have worked out well for me at middleweight, and I've stayed focused here at this weight class, and it paid off. And you know, I didn't expect anything less of myself. This is something that I've worked towards for a long, long time. This did not come by a surprise, and so I'm just grateful for the opportunity, and I'm going to have fun doing it.
And it was definitely not an easy route because you fought tough opponents like Jacare to Chris Weidman, you know, former champion. But where do you think that Robert Whittaker, you know, stacks amongst guys that you fought and beaten?
I mean, he's going to be the number one guy. You know, he's the guy that has the belt. He's the guy right now. He's the guy that beat who many people thought was going to be the guy in Yoel Romero. He beat him twice. So I feel like, you know, you got to beat the man to be the man. And, you know, Rob is the man right now. You know what I mean? And I got to beat him to be the man.
Now, what do you think of his fighting style? He's very well-rounded, great striker, good wrestling. What do you think?
I feel like Rob is tough. He's got a great set of skills, but it's nothing I haven't seen before. I don't think he brings anything to the table that's going to be surprising, anything that I haven't seen before. I train with one of the best teams in the world at Kings, and you know, I train with the best strikers in the world, the best kickboxers, the best wrestlers, the best jiu-jitsu guys in the world. And so anything he brings, I've seen it all. And so I feel like I'm more than prepared for this opportunity. I'm more than prepared to win this belt. And I feel like my time is now.
Now, what weakness do you see that he has that you plan on exploiting?
I just feel like I'm able to box. If he wants to box, then we can box. I feel like I'm going to be a little bit more technical and more sharper than he will be. If he wants to wrestle, I feel like my wrestling is a little bit better than his. You know, a lot of people forget I was a wrestler. And that's how I started in this career, and I wrestled for more than 10 years. I was one of the top wrestlers in the country for a while, and so I got that in my back pocket. Even though I like to box. So
yeah, no, you are again very well rounded as well. Now he did tell media that he thinks, you know, you may be slightly underestimating him. Do you agree?
He might be right. I don't think he's anything special.
And so with that being said, him coming off the back-to-back wins over Yoel Romero, decision and split decision, did you score the fight that way?
You know what? To be honest, I thought Yoel had fought and won the second fight. But selfishly, I wanted Rob to win so that I can have the biggest opportunity to get the next title shot. You know, I felt like if Yoel would have won, they would have done the third fight just because he didn't make weight, you know, and they would have done the third fight. And that would have extended my chances of fighting for the title. So I was glad Rob won.
But do you think that Yoel would have been a tougher challenge than Rob?
No, to be honest. You know, Yoel is a great fighter, but he, you know, just like everybody, he's got weaknesses. I've got weaknesses. Rob's got weaknesses, and I was, you know, more than ready to exploit those weaknesses.
And lastly, before your fight in January, someone that you're close to, Henry Cejudo, he is fighting T.J. Dillashaw. How do you see that fight playing out?
I call him El Niño de Oro, the golden boy. You know, Olympic gold medalist, UFC champion. Henry is a very good friend of mine, and I'm very happy for all the success that he's been having. And I'm very excited for his fight that he's got coming up.
How do you see that playing out? Any early predictions?
You know what? Henry is a bad mofo. He's one of the nicest dudes ever. But fighting, wrestling, whatever, anything fighting, he's the best at it, and I feel like he's going to do really good.
So that was my interview. Kelvin Gastelum fighting UFC 234. Only, what, it's December, January, February. 2 months away.
I think that math checks out. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, I calculated.
I'd have to see a calendar, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, February 10th. When we get back from the break, I also spoke to Claudia Gadella, who fights Nina Ansaroff, UFC 231 this weekend on the prelims, Fox Sports 1. So stay tuned. I'll be right back with your interview with Claudia. You can always tweet me at Helen Yee Sports, and you're listening to Eyes on the Game.
Now back to Eyes on the Game with Helen Yee, the only female sports host in Las Vegas. Go online to HelenMYee.com and follow on Twitter at Helen Yee Sports on NBC Sports 920 The Game.
What's going on, everyone? So before the break, I aired my interview with Kelvin Gastelum. Now, Claudia Gadella, UFC women's strawweight, she fights Nina Ansaroff this weekend, UFC 231, going down in Toronto. So here is my interview with Claudia. Helen Yee here with Eyes on the Game. I'm here at the UFC Performance Institute being joined by the always lovely Claudia. Now, you are fighting UFC 231 against Nina Ansaroff. Can you kind of talk about that fight and how this training camp went?
Hello, guys. I'm very happy with the fight. I wanted to fight before the end of the year. Actually, the day before the fight, it's my 30th year anniversary. You know, I'm gonna be 30 years old the day before.
Yeah, it's your birthday. Yeah, it's happy early birthday.
Thank you. So I'm happy to be able to work, you know, the day after my fight, and also get over and go celebrate the whole month with my family. My parents are coming from Brazil, and I'm really happy with it. Camp was great. No injuries. I feel good. I feel like that's a good fight for me, even though Nina, it's not a top-ranked fighter. She's still a great fighter, you know, and she was the only one that stepped up when I needed to fight, so I'm good to go.
Now, you are coming off a win over Carla Esparza, the former champion. She is coming off a three-fight win streak, and she just beat Ronda Marcos. What did you think of her fight?
It was a great fight. I felt like Ronda was kind of lost. She didn't know what to do. Nina, it's a good striker. You know, she has a Taekwondo background, and I feel like Ronda was kind of lost. She didn't find a good range, and she didn't know what to do, but I thought it was a great fight.
Now, what do you hope to capitalize in this fight?
Nina is a good striker, but it's not a kickboxing match, you know. It is MMA, and I feel like I'm more well-rounded. I'm stronger. I'm faster, and I feel like I'm going to beat her in every area.
Now, where do you hope that a win over Nina will bring you in this division?
Will get me, you know, in two fight win streak. I'm not thinking about the title yet. You know, I'm fixing things in my game. I'm concentrating and getting better. That's why I'm spending a lot of time here in the UFC Performance Institute. And I feel like I need a little bit of more time to get better and to feel better to get back there and fight for that title.
Now, working here with the UFC Performance Institute, for the majority of this camp, have the people been about the same, you know, as far as like sparring partners, or did you bring in other coaches, sparring partners? And
I feel like if you keep doing the same thing over and over, you can't expect different results, you know, so I'm always trying to do different things, especially now that I'm like the boss of my camp. I can bring people in and know what to do. You know, before, I feel like when I was fighting for a team, when I was training a big team, I had to do what they want me to do. Now, you know, with all the experience I have, with all that time in the game, I know what's good for me, and I have been changing everything the whole time.
Now, going to Canada, you told me you leave on Sunday, but so I follow you on Instagram and I watched your story. I think you know what I'm talking about. Can you kind of tell the viewers who may not have seen your story just kind of the confusion you have because and what happened when you went there last time?
Yeah, so I fought in Canada back in 2011. It was actually my first international fight. And 2 minutes before the fight, a guy from the commission at Lead came up to me and he was like, "Where's your cup?" I was like, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You need a cup to fight in Canada, either men or women, you need a cup to fight." I was like, "Okay, come on, I don't have a cup." And then he told me, "All right, no cup, no fight." So I didn't know what to do. I wanted to fight, right? And I had a teammate fighting the same card. He fought like 20 minutes before me. And so I came up to him and I was like, dude, give me that cup right now. I gotta go fight. He was like, what are you saying? I was like, just give me that cup. And so he went to the bathroom. He gave me his cup. And then a lady from the commission athlete followed me all the way back to the bathroom. And then she watched me. She actually like watched me put that thing on. And then they cleared me and I went and fought. So my question was, it's 2018, you know, like 7 years after all that happened. Am I going to need a cup to fight or not? They told me I don't need it. They changed the rules. But anyway, I'm taking a cup with me just to make sure I'm going to be okay.
Better safe than sorry. And then also on that card, it is your formal rival, Joanna. She is fighting Valentina. How do you see that fight playing out?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. You know, it's MMA now.
Yeah, and so what happened was I was interviewing her, and I was kind of bummed because then my camera just shut off. Sometimes technology.
I mean, yeah.
Technical difficulties.
That sincerely happened to me like 4 times, so I don't let me touch any like non-audio based electronics anymore.
Yeah, well, sometimes I'm just like, what the heck? You know, like everything was fine, then boom, shut up. I was like, what? And then like yesterday I did another interview, used the same camera and it works.
Yeah, so it's just like it's random like,
electric. Was it a ghost? What was it?
The running joke is sometimes you gotta get the bad electricity out and the good electricity in, because that's how electricity works. But yeah,
oh, okay.
Know. Yeah, that's why whenever you need to reset your router, you just unplug it and plug it back in, and then it will work fine because you got to get the bad electricity out. I sound like a crazy cat lady.
No, hey, you sound like a very knowledgeable person. More knowledgeable than I. But so we're going to head to a quick break. I wanted to play an interview with John Wood. I may play a part of it. He is the owner of Syndicate MMA. And also trains a plethora of fighters that fight in from the UFC to the Golden Boy MMA spinoff promotion thing that they did. So I will play part of that interview and then discuss the fights coming up and kind of my predictions. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Eyes on the Game.
You're listening to Sports 920, The Game.
Now back to Eyes on the Game with Helen Yee, the only female sports host in Las Vegas. Go online to HelenMYee.com and follow on Twitter at Helen Yee Sports on NBC Sports 920, The Game.
Okay, what's up? So today I played the interviews with Kelvin Gastelum, Claudia Gadella, and I also spoke to Syndicate MMA, the owner and head coach of many fighters in the UFC and other organizations, Mr. John Wood. This is a longer interview, so I will be playing most of the interview, and then you can find the rest. Or if you want to watch it on video on lvsportsnetwork.com later today. But here's my interview with John Wood. Helen Yee here with Eyes on the Game. I'm here at Syndicate MMA in Las Vegas, being joined by the man of the hour, the head coach and owner of Syndicate, Mr. John Wood. Now, first off, I know you've been extremely busy, a lot going on, and you came back here not too long ago from Golden Boy MMA with Tom Lawler. Can you first off kind of talk about how that went?
Sure. Golden Boy was it was an interesting situation with Tom. We had, you know, found out the whole debacle with the UFC, and so we got offered that fight. It's a good promotion. The money was good. It was a good name. There's a lot of hype coming off of, you know, with the Tito Ortiz and the Chuck deal. So it's a big promotion to kind of put him back in. We had a different opponent kind of lined up, and it was actually switched about 2.5 weeks before the fight, and switched to Duran. So we had a guy, I forget which guy we're fighting, I think Berg or whatever, and he was like 6'5", and, you know, huge, big guy. And then got switched 2 weeks out to Duran, who is 5'5", and an amazing wrestler and the whole thing. So Tom just wanted to get back in there and do the whole thing. You know, he's a competitor. He's never stopped training and never, you know, he's never faltered through all of this stuff. And so just got him in there. And, you know, Duran is a super tough opponent. You know, that kid's got a huge future about, you know, in front of him. Not ideal for the first fight back, but like I said, the promotion and getting him back in there fighting and just kind of knocking off the dust was a good thing. Overall, you know, didn't go the way we wanted. The fight didn't go the way we wanted to. Duran's, like I said, a great competitor, great fighter. But the promotion itself, you know, was actually was done well. The you know, the back end of it, as far as, you know, the production and the staff and everything there, was really good, actually. I really hope they have more fights now, you know, and more shows, because anytime there's a big show and there's more work for the fighters is better. Now, the level of the fights and the things that they put on, obviously you guys saw, you know, the Chuck and Tito thing was cringeworthy. It was a bad, you know, but it was a big draw for them, or supposedly probably a big, you know, I don't know how what the numbers were. I don't hear that they were good, but it caused enough buzz for people to be interested into it. But overall, you know, the quality of the fights or the main event, those kind of things, I think really kind of made the show look, you know, kind of tainted a little bit with the Chuck and Tito thing. But the back end of the show and the production was very well. And you know, I'd love to see him do another fight.
So speaking of the main event, though, like you said, I mean, it was very controversial, you know, got a lot of mixed reviews, and especially about how Chuck looked in there. So, you know, you've been a coach in this sport for a very long time and also a fighter. What do you think of that situation, you know, having Chuck Liddell, 48 years old, going back in there? What was your thoughts, kind of?
I mean, we all remember Chuck from his, you know, his glory days and as a killer. You know, and it was the, oh man, I'd love to see him go out there. He had already knocked Tito out twice, or TKO'd him, whatever. And we were all hoping for the same thing, I think, and the same, you know, glory days to come back. But as the videos surfaced and the training and things happened, it was kind of apparent to most people that he probably wasn't sandbagging, and it was just a kind of not the same fighter. And it's tough for fighters, man. Like, you know, Chuck came out and said he didn't want to retire then, was kind of forced into retirement from knockouts. He was given a good job from the UFC. Dana gave him a good job. And then, you know, that all came to an end. And, you know, I'm not one, I don't know about his financial situation, but I mean, a lot of that could have been, you know, money oriented too. You get offered a big payday to come back, and it's something that he loved to do. And the guy's always a, you know, a constant competitor and wants to fight. The dude's a born fighter. I've spent some time around him, and he's the guy just likes to fight, you know? So whatever his motivations were, their money, sure, probably. Were they, you know, the fact that he wanted to get back in there and do it again, probably misses it? Yeah. Should he have? No, probably not. You know, some people should have probably stepped up and said, hey, you know, let's not do this. But with all that being said, it's hard to tell somebody who, you know, is dead set. I you know, there's a lot of times when my fighters fight, and I just tell them, you know, be honest with me about why you're taking this fight. If it's a short notice fighter, do you need the money? If you come to me, if one of my fighters comes to me and says, hey, I've got to take this fight on 2 weeks notice because I got to pay my bills. You know, you look at things differently in perspective. And as long as there, you know, there's some times that as fighters, the money that you're made, you were put in positions that you don't want to be put in to survive, you know. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily what happened with Chuck, but it, you know, it's kind of looks that way.
But in your opinion, though, when do you think a fighter should really retire?
You know, one, there's always the joy in it when you stop. There's a point in time, I remember for me, I didn't have like a great career. I fought, you know, almost 20 times professionally, but I wasn't like, every time I got to a spot, I'd get injured and things were just, my body was falling apart too early in my career to really make a push. I remember sitting in the bathtub cutting weight and just being so over it. I'm like, God, I hate this. This is horrible. This is miserable. I don't want to do this anymore. And that point in time, right then and there, I knew I didn't want to do it. I was over it. And I fought two more times past that, lost both of them, and for stupid stuff. And that was the time for me to sit back and say, I had a set thing. I was like, if I lose three times in a row, I'm done. That happened. I was done. When you lose the love of it, you know, that's always kind of a telltale. But like, there's health issues. There's you know, when your chin goes, when you're getting knocked out, you know, you want to be able to play with your kids when you're, you know, old, or your grandkids, or your things. There becomes a point in time when it becomes a health risk, you know, and when your body physically can't do it anymore, you hope that the people around you and the people that, you know, love and support you, and your teammates and your former coaches, you know, your significant other, can have that conversation and maybe say, hey, you know, you're not the same. Because a lot of times in our minds, you know, I still mess around and spar and do it every week. I train, and then sometimes I'll watch videos of myself and be like, oh God, I didn't know I looked like that. You know, it's a very, very complicated, touchy subject.
Yeah, and there's like would you agree there's a different time for each fighter?
Yes. Yeah, there's no set time. I mean, you look like Randy Couture fought successfully into his 40s. You know, I mean, even Tito right now, even like the fights are, you know, yeah, you got guys that, you know, Tito's 40 some years old and coming off of 5 wins. He's picking his fights well. They're well matched for him. You know, if you have the capability, that guy earned his keep and made a, you know, a name for himself and a legend in the sport, that he's been able to, he's still a draw at that age and is able to pick and choose his fights kind of that are good for him. If you can still do that in an even level, then that's fine. Everybody's times are different. Hunt, you know, came out, he's what, 44 years old too. You can obviously, age is the killer of all of us. You know, it doesn't matter what you're fighting, doesn't matter what your profession is. You can only do things for so long before it catches up to you. It just catches up to people different times.
No, very well said, and I completely agree with you. But speaking of big fights, a lot going on this month. I know the end of the month, you do have Michael Chiesa. He is fighting Carlos Condit, UFC 232. Next month, Joanne Calderwood, she is fighting. Before I get to those fights, though, Jessica Rose Clark, I believe she has a fight coming up. But it looks like she doesn't train here anymore. Can you kind of clarify, you know, the situation?
Just is no longer with Team Syndicate. She's still working with Walker Vivian, one of our head striking coaches here at the gym. You know, sometimes it's just one of those things where people need to move on and do what they think is best for them. And sometimes for me, it's having to let them go do that. We, you know, a couple weeks ago decided to kind of, you know, go our separate ways. She's, you know, she's one. She's always kind of jumped around a little bit and bounced around from gyms. And, you know, she is like, has that gypsy mentality. She's even gone on record saying that. And there's times, almost every camp, it's been kind of a fight to keep her in the gym. She wants to float. It's not so much about training other places, but literally just, you know, I think there was a point in time where she bought a van and was planning on traveling around the country and doing whatever. And maybe that's good for her. At the time, you know, I did say, you know, you should stay here, plant some roots, get you where you're going to go, you know, let's get you in the UFC, get you, you know, into the spot you need to be, and it worked. And then sometimes it just, you know, you just outgrow each other. And I think that's kind of a case what happened. She's going in a different direction. My gym, my team going in a different direction, and you know, it was just time to part ways.
But that happened during the camp, though, right?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago, I think about maybe even like just 10 days ago or something like that. So she's a few weeks out. And it was just kind of, things just weren't clicking for me and her and her here at the team and things like that. Just, it was very clear to see that, you know, all parties were kind of...
Oh, on the same page.
Yeah, on the same page. Well, not on the same page, but on the same page of not being on the same page. It was, you know, it was just time for a change. She wasn't happy. We weren't exactly happy, you know, with the situation either, and people here weren't happy with it. And it just, you know, like I said, it was just a better thing. There's no sense in going into a fight for her when I don't believe 100% or support 100% into her, and she doesn't into me or things. It just was better to, you know, go her way. I wish the best for her. I don't have any ill will towards anybody who feels like they need to improve themselves. If that takes them away from the gym, then it does.
Yeah, so do you see or foresee her ever training with you again, or not at the moment?
Nah, I think that ship sailed. I think I'm happy without it, and so is she, and we can go and she can travel and do her things. And like I said, I wish her nothing but the best. And we had a good run when we did.
But there are a lot of great fighters training here. Like I said, Michael Chiesa fighting Carlos Condit. So he's looking to bounce back from the fight against Anthony Pettis. Can you kind of, you know, talk about his fight coming up?
Yeah, Chiesa's been spending the majority of his camp back. You know, he usually splits time between here and in Washington with his camp out there, Sick Jiu-Jitsu, whatever, with Rick Little and his team out there. He's got a good group of guys, and so last camp he was out here working at the PI a lot and doing some stuff, but he chose to kind of spend some more time there, and I think he'll be back out here shortly. You know, he's moving up a weight class, and with Chiesa, he's a giant guy. He's huge. I mean, he's 6'1", 6'2", walks around at 200+. It was just more, he's more than ready to move up in weight division. The guy's, you know, super strong, athletic. He's a grinder. This fight with Condit, obviously Carlos is one of the original, like, just super tough, you know, gritty veterans, and he's very well-rounded everywhere. So it's going to be a good test for Mike. I believe that Chiesa, you know, will be able to use his strengths and to Carlos's weaknesses, and I think he'll pull out the win. I think it's going to be a great fight. I think it's going to be a bloody fight. But I see Michael, using his, even at 170, I think people are going to be shocked at how big and how strong he is at 170. So I think I'm very excited for that fight. And, I think Michael get it.
Yeah, a lot of people are definitely looking forward to that fight. Another one, Joanne Calderwood. Now she is coming off an impressive submission victory. First off, can you, kind of talk about her fight and how it's been like to train her?
Yeah, Joanne just come off a huge, submission win, which was her first of her career. The thing about JoJo is that people don't realize she's got an awesome ground game. She's actually really, really good on the ground. She's slick. She's fast. She's a hard worker. And with that, it's just kind of building confidence. I don't know that she's ever had confidence put into her ground game and spent time there. And before the camp, she was doing awesome. With their submissions and catching a lot of the high-level girls, and people here in submissions. And so we'd worked a ton off of it. Of just with JoJo, she's everything you would want in a fighter. She's dedicated. She works hard. She's tough. She's got the heart. She's got the brain. She's got the mind for it. I feel like over the situation, she was on a kind of a little downslide there. And I think it was more of a mental thing of feeling confident. So one of the things I picked up on real quick with her is just making her feel confident. And she's one of those fighters that if she feels confident going to the fight, I really feel like she can beat anybody. So it was just kind of sharpening up a little, a couple of little things that I saw, the weaknesses, learning, teaching her how to control a cage. And she's always been a great striker. Said her ground was good before she got here. She knew what she needed to do, just maybe not when and how. Like, so we started putting that stuff together, and she's been awesome to work with, man. She's a grinder every day, never misses a session. She's always here early, warms up, great attitude, helps her training partners, and just really, I see nothing but a big future ahead of her.
So for the rest of the interview, you can go on lvsportsnetwork.com. It will be posted there later in the day. But this weekend, UFC 231, I touched on that earlier with the interview with Claudia, and also the main event, the one I've been waiting for a very long time, Max Holloway, current champion, featherweight champion, against Brian Ortega, still undefeated in his pro MMA career. Now, I don't know. I mean, this is going to be such a great fight. Two young, hungry fighters, like I said earlier. Brian Ortega, if he grabs a hold of one of your limbs, you're probably going to get submitted. Max Holloway, though, great striker. But Brian, I mean, I noticed improvements in his boxing. And you know what? I'm actually going to go with Brian Ortega. You can never count out Max Holloway. He's had classic fights, great fights. One that stands out vividly to me against Ricardo Lamas, and then Anthony Pettis, of course, the Jose Aldo fights, back-to-back wins, where he stops Aldo. So you can never count out the heart of Max Holloway. His last loss didn't come. It was back in 2013 from Conor McGregor, but that was 5 years ago, right? When Max was obviously not in his prime. And yeah, so I'm going with Brian Ortega, Valentina Shevchenko versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I'm going with Valentina Shevchenko. I think, I mean, she's beaten her Joanna before. So I think now that it's MMA, she's going to beat her again. And yeah, it'll be a great fight. But I will post a preview on LVSportsNetwork.com. You can always tweet me at Helen Yee Sports. I hope everyone has a beautiful Tuesday, beautiful week, right, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, it is Tuesday. That is true. I mean, we still have a little bit of time.
Okay. Yeah, I was like,
sorry. Yeah, we still have some time.
Okay. Yeah, my, clearly my time versus their time, it's different, but,
yeah. Sorry about that. That's on me. I'm supposed to be in charge of this stuff. I'm supposed to be helping.
Yeah, but no. So I'm looking at the card this weekend. Good card. And then also UFC 232 back here, end of the year. That one's going to be exciting. But again, the one this weekend, let me know your thoughts. Once again, you can tweet me at Helen Yee Sports. I appreciate your support, your love. And I will talk to you next week.